disperse immediately or you will be subject to arrest with now.
A boss ain't nothing but a thief on a time loan. 128 bit war, you play Nintendo on some shooter, so put the bridge down and feed us to the killer bees. We get what we deserve, life. Bury me with my MP3s. Write my manifesto in 72 DPI. Life's just a game, you got cheated, never learn. I write these songs every bridge that ain't been burned. For every cop car that ain't.
Welcome to This Is America, September 11th, 2018. Lots happened over the weekend, from anti-fascist clashes, noise demonstrations in solidarity with the prison strike, the disclosure of a network of nonprofit kid prisons in Chicago holding children separated from their parents at the border, clashes with police in Dallas after an off-duty officer killed a man in his own apartment, to open revolt by students in Sacramento who launched a strike, a series of walkouts, and chanted, "You can't stop the revolution." In response to their school firing staff, shutting down their campus during lunch, and forcing students in over 100-degree weather to wear pants. We also are going to play an audio clip on the situation in Stillwater Prison in Minnesota, as well as talk to somebody that was out in the streets in Chapel Hill in North Carolina when police attacked yet another anti-racist demonstration. All this and more, but first, let's get to the news. If you are on the East Coast, especially in North or South Carolina, check out Mutual Aid Disaster Relief, as they have updates on the hurricane as well as the autonomous disaster relief responses which are planned to it. There is a new central donation hub for people arrested in the wake of the Silent Sam statue being toppled. Check it out in our show notes and share it on social media. Today, anarchists, anti-fascists, and community members rallied in Washington, D.C., in support of an indie media journalist that was facing a grand jury subpoena to turn over footage from August 12, 2018 at the Unite the Right protests. In the morning, people rallied, read statements, and the person who had gotten a subpoena burned the copies of the document. After burning the subpoena, they got a call from their lawyer on the streets, ironically, that the subpoena was dropped in court. As one person says, "I guess you just have to burn it." To see photos and video footage of the rally, check out Alec Rubenstein's coverage that is linked in our show notes.
Got a call from my attorney. The subpoena has been withdrawn. They have given up. They have thrown in the towel. We have won. They have lost. Any questions?
Wow, so you just have to set it on fire and then it doesn't count.
Also today in Chicago, there was a press conference that brought to light the existence of a series of nonprofits that are housing children that are taken from their families at the border. If you're wondering where some of the children went that were separated from their families, some of them were housed in these facilities in Chicago. There's a flyer that's in our show notes in Spanish and English that goes into much more detail, and there's a series of ProPublica pieces that have just been released about this subject that are very hard to read, but they definitely have lots of really graphic information. And you can also follow Little Village Solidarity Network on Twitter for more information, and there should be more information and actions that are planned in the very near future. Lastly, today, people fighting the Line 3 pipeline in the Midwest disrupted a permitting process meeting. In Dallas, Texas last night, people took to the streets after the police murder of Botham Jean, an African-American man. Disgustingly, according to even the police account of the killing, Jean was shot and killed when a police officer entered his apartment, mistaking it for her own. The officer was a female officer that was off duty, and then shot and killed him. He was 26 years old. According to a witness, however, they heard, quote, a woman's voice saying, "Let me in, let me in." Then they heard gunshots, after which one witness said she heard a man's voice say, "Oh my God, why did you do that?" People in Chicago fighting to abolish money bail have made an awesome new video. Check it out in our show notes. In so-called Victoria, six protesters were arrested after they took over a fishing boat at a shipyard and dropped a banner. Indigenous warriors have been fighting fish farms in the so-called British Columbia in order to protect their territory and stop the spread of GMO fish. A rally in support of hunger strikers taking part in the prison strike took place outside of a prison in Halifax. Anarchists held a rally outside of a New York courthouse in support of Anna Chambers, who was raped by several NYPD officers. Neo-Nazi Patrick Little is starting another U.S. tour to, quote, name the Jew. Check out our show notes to see his route across the U.S. In Gainesville, Florida, people at the encampment outside of a prison facility heard from prisoners that they wanted to see the film Black Panther, and they then showed up with big screens and massive speakers so the prisoners could see it. Check out Gainesville iWalk and our show notes to see a clip. Banner drops took place in New Orleans and Maryland in solidarity with the prison strike, and in Colorado against ICE. There was a protest against the GEO Group, a private prison outside of their HQ in Boca Raton in Florida. And Rose City Antifa wrote on the recent Torch Conference in Richmond, Virginia, big shout out to Antifa Seven Hills for organizing and hosting the 5th annual Torch Conference in RVA last weekend. It was great to share challenges and successes of Torch members had in 2018. It was also awesome to plan for what's coming in 2019 too. See you next year in Portland. Over the last month, 4 law enforcement officers in Atlanta, Georgia have been fired from their jobs thanks to the work of anti-fascist researchers that have discovered their links to white national circles. The latest, a sheriff was found to be connected to the KKK. These are coming from anti-fascist researchers in Atlanta. Big ups to them. The Autonomous Tenants Union in Chicago has another recent win. They wrote, quote, "Yesterday, Adalia Ozoko received the last check from her landlord who had refused to return her security deposit. Through direct action in a small claims lawsuit, the landlord returned the deposit with a little extra." A noise demonstration took place in solidarity with the prison strike in Seattle, Washington. The Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement held a motorcade in Brooklyn, New York in support of the prison strike. Check out the awesome video in our show notes. Across the U.S., solidarity actions have also taken place with Laquan McDonald, whose killer, police officer Jason Van Dyke, is currently facing trial in Chicago. In Sacramento last week, students launched a series of strikes, pickets, and demonstrations against the firing of teachers and staff, the locking of the school during lunch, as well as being forced to wear uniform pants in over 100-degree weather. We're now going to share a clip of a news segment from the local news in Sacramento, California, about what's going on that captures the spirit of what's happening and also shows a lot of students chanting, protesting, and also giving interviews with the media.
Students at Sacramento High School in Oak Park are in open revolt at this point. You're looking at some of the video here from today, refusing to return to class until their demands are being met by school administration. At issue here is the dismissal of a couple of faculty and staff. It happened over the summer. Thanks for being with us here at 6, everybody. I'm Eric Carryman.
And I'm Nikki Lorenzo. Students are also opposed to new rules in uniforms and dismissal after class. Fox 40's Doug Johnson has more from the Sac High campus.
Between 100 and 200 Sacramento High students refused to go to class today, costing the school state money for every period they miss.
We have been fighting for years for them to listen and support us as Black and Latino kids. That is majority of our population.
Senior Kira Young says students are furious. They came back from summer break to find many teachers and support staff have been let go.
We barely have any teachers of color this year. Over the summer, they had fired and let go majority of them.
My position was eliminated.
Wanda Stark says after 16 years working at Sac High as a staff member, her job was cut a week after school let out for the summer.
They told us to reapply for the positions that they had supposedly consolidated, and when we did, we were off-boarded.
But Young says there were also other changes. Students are now not allowed to stay on campus once school lets out for the day.
They lock all the doors before we even out of school, so nobody can go back inside, so we don't get help from our teachers. And you're pushed outside of these gates into the streets, so many people can't get picked up till a lot later.
And Young says the school's uniform dress code is just unacceptable.
We have to wear pants and it's 100-degree weather.
Fox 40 attempted to reach school administrators. However, calls and messages sent to St. Hope's, the nonprofit which runs the charter school, were not returned. Meanwhile, Stark says she's proud these students are standing up for what they believe in.
This is what we taught them. This is what we wanted them to have, self-worth.
In Oak Park in South Sacramento, Doug Johnson, Fox 40 News.
And students say they also staged a walkout on Monday and Wednesday. They plan to continue full-day walkouts until school administrators negotiate with them.
In Chapel Hill, North Carolina, police brutally attacked and gassed protesters that were rallying to collect canned food and have a picnic in the face of yet another neo-Confederate rally at the site where the Silent Sam statue was toppled. Listen to our interview in this episode for more information about what went down. In so-called Canada, Toronto police protected and allowed a collection of Proud Boys, anti-immigrant groups, and militia members to march, despite fierce and hard opposition from anti-fascists in the streets. See our show notes for pictures and video clips. In Connecticut, a noise demonstration took place in solidarity with the prison strike. In Seattle, members of the John Brown Gun Club, along with other organizations, provided clinic defense. Neo-Nazi and former TWP member Jamie Troutman has been outed by anti-fascists in West Virginia. Check our show notes for more information. No Borders Media out of so-called Canada has a new weekly radio show that you can check out in our show notes linked. Twin Cities Iowalk has also released a new recording from Stillwater Prison, which has been on lockdown for almost 60 days. Check out Unicorns Riot's article about the subject, and we're now going to play the audio from that recording.
Channel 5 News this morning that they said that we're off lockdown. We're not. We're still locked in. They're just letting us out 3 hours a day. We have no recreation, no yard, no regular meals. They're bringing us these lockdown meals that are pretty much designed for the lockdown. So the we're not getting that required calorie intake. The administration doesn't have anything established outside of just taking everybody's jobs. And once they do that, that means 95% of the prison is going to be locked in all day. And that's going to create more problems. The DOC idea of what rehabilitation is pretty much over with. You know, because like the DC carpenter, you know, you got guys out there going out there trying to get a trade or a skill, upholstery shop. You know, these are skilled labor jobs that you can get out and stay employed and find work. But now that's going to be gone. With the 17 prisons on strike all across the country, man, I think people need to start waking up to what's going on inside these prisons.
A noise demonstration in the Inland Empire in Southern California took place in solidarity with the prison strike. Fuck your flip actions continue to take place across Southern California as well, and the country. Fuck your flips refers to the tactic of tearing down signs asking people to trade in foreclosures and cheap houses so they can be, quote, flipped, a key part of gentrification in many neighborhoods. And finally, a noise demonstration took place outside of the Attica prison. That's going to do it for us this time around. We will see you next time and enjoy the interview with somebody from Chapel Hill about the recent anti-fascist and anti-racist mobilizations and the brutal response they face from the police. Thanks a lot. We'll see you soon.
Too kind to be out fighting in a war. Too bold to turn the other cheek. Can pretend to ignore the difference she could make to the cause. When she left her life behind, she knew what she did it for, and Anna was her name. To believe the lies they like to tell. Too caring and compassionate to let those thugs raise hell. She saw the revolution for what it was. When they held her back, she dyed her hair and said, "I don't think so, boss." And Anna was her name. And on that day, as the Turkish planes rolled in, we lost an angel in a friend, and that's where a body still lies, despite everyone's cries. She is cold and alone. So bring Anna home. Bring Anna home. Thank you.
too kind to be out fighting in a war. Too bold to turn the other cheek and pretend to ignore the difference she could make to the cause. And she left her life behind, she knew what she did it for. And Anna was her name.
Okay, we're joined here today with somebody that's been in the Chapel Hill area that has seen a variety of demonstrations go down against the Silent Sam Confederate statue that's at the campus. It has been brought down in recent weeks, and there's been a succession of demonstrations of neo-Confederate groups coming out to the campus in support of the statue or putting the statue back. Most recently, there was something that happened on Saturday, but just curious, can you just tell people, in general, a little history of the statue and what's been happening up until this point?
Yeah, so the statue, Silent Sam, was put up during the Jim Crow era by the Daughters of the Confederacy. And the thing that often gets even liberals up in arms about the statue is a speech made at the statue's dedication by Julian Carr, who a local town is actually named after Carrboro, but he was like a big local businessman. And he said at the statue's dedication that like 100 yards from where we stand, I whipped a Negro wench, and basically brags about having committed this assault against this Black woman. And he also talks throughout this whole speech about the like sanctity of the Anglo-Saxon race and stuff. So he was like a terrible person. And so Silent Sam is just a anonymous Confederate soldier supposed to represent the people at the students at UNC who fought for the Confederacy. And, you know, a lot of the people who have been coming out to support the statue purport to be doing so because they're like, you know, this statue isn't racist. It honors my ancestors who died in the Civil War fighting for the Confederacy, and just refuse to acknowledge the role that the Confederacy played in perpetuating slavery and supporting slavery. And refuse to acknowledge the white supremacy that the statue explicitly represents. So on August 20th, there was a demonstration in solidarity with an activist, a Black student, Maya Little, who last year poured her blood and red paint on the statue. And during that demonstration, which was like really beautiful, an alternative monument was erected around the statue. One of the panels said, "For a world without white supremacy." There were like four panels around the statue, and each of them were like 20-foot tall banners on bamboo poles. So they pretty much obscured the statue entirely, and it was like beautiful to see that statue, you know, obscured finally after towering over our town for over 100 years. Sometime during that night, folks, like about a couple hours after the demo started, folks tore the statue down. So it was just like an amazing moment. Everyone was cheering, you know, for 10 seconds. I looked up and saw the rope and I was like, this is going to be so embarrassing. This thing is not going to come down. Because there was like definitely a good 10 seconds, maybe not, it felt like forever to me, where people were pulling on the rope and just like nothing was happening. and then there was like a wonk, and then everyone just like started cheering, and 2 seconds later the statue was down. It was amazing. And there was just one arrest that night. The police, I was shocked at how little police violence and repression there was. Someone got arrested for masking up at the beginning of the night, but like were masked up the rest of the night, and the police were pretty much keeping their distance.
Right. And just to go back to one thing that you brought up before, I think it's really important to state that these statues, you know, which, you know, there are hundreds across the South and across the United States, but they were put up largely in two key periods during, you know, the period following Reconstruction, as you said, during the Jim Crow period, and also during the Civil Rights Movement, kind of in reaction to that. So, you know, they were put up by, you know, a lot of these pro-Confederacy or neo-Confederate groups during these key, you know, periods where the black struggle for liberation was, you know, very intense and, of course, happening across the country and in the streets. So it was basically to remind people of, you know, who's in power and who's calling the shots.
Yeah, definitely. And when you look at lynchings from the time period, you know, there are several lynchings happening all around the state at the time that statue is going up. So it was definitely a sign to everyone about who belonged on campus and who didn't. And black students weren't allowed at UNC until, I can't remember the year, but, you know, many years after that statue was erected.
Are there, I mean, this is going to sound maybe like just an off the wall question, but like, are there statues in the South for like, you know, John Brown or Nat Turner or, you know,
Not that I know of. I would be shocked if there were.
Harriet Tubman. I mean, any sort of Southern figures that.
I mean, I'm sure there are. I mean, I am not any sort of expert on the South. There is the museum that just opened with, you know, with all the information about lynching that I've heard is incredibly powerful. But at least in our area, to my knowledge, there aren't that many. There certainly aren't monuments on college campuses or on state-owned, you know, grounds prominently displayed that are, you know, monuments to these figures that we would like to see monuments to. People often talk about that there are, I think, three Confederate statues near the state, or like on the state capitol grounds in Raleigh. So, I mean, the state has put so much effort into, obviously in the past, putting these statues up, but then also protecting them. So I guess another thing to know about what's happening here is that a few years ago, right after the massacre in Charleston, the North Carolina legislature passed a law that statues couldn't be moved or altered in any way for a period of like 15 years or something. So there's no, like, obviously, I'm not trying to pursue legislative solutions, but there are no legislative solutions to removing these statues.
At least for like another
field. Yeah.
12 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, that's really intense.
Yeah.
So can you take us, so the statue was pulled down, and then several days later, a group, it's like a really long alphabet soup acronym, but it's like a neo-Confederate organization. I know some of the people involved within it participated in going to Unite the Right. Seems there's like some crossover with like 3%ers, which is quite ironic considering there was a police officer that was seen guarding the statue that had a 3%er logo very prominent tattooed on his arm. I believe that officer is now on paid leave while they investigate.
Yeah, exactly. He's on paid leave. Yeah, so the most prominent group that has come to the statue to honor it since its removal is a Southern Poverty Law Center designated hate group called ACT BACK, which stands for Alamance County, Taking Back Alamance County. Alamance County is one or two counties.
I think the Aflac commercial. Like.
It's such a funny name. It's a hilarious name. And they're a group, I think they have, last time I looked, they had like 10,000 likes on Facebook. But a lot of those people are from groups, you know, all over the country. And so they planned, like, a sort of secret event. Like, I think it wasn't listed on Facebook until a day before or something. And it was actually in conjunction with an Oath Keepers chapter. Although it turns out it was an unauthorized Oath Keepers chapter. There's a like funny letter from whoever the like head oath keeper is, who's like, you're not a real oath keeper. You don't pay your dues. Like, don't call yourself oath keepers.
When the oath keepers pull your card, you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, that's just embarrassing. They're like, the oath keepers didn't even want to stand beside them for what they were doing. So they came to campus, and the campus just wasn't, this was the Saturday, so it was pulled down on a Monday. This was the Saturday after. The campus police just weren't ready for this sort of thing. And frankly, it was new to a lot of the people who were there too. There were a lot of undergraduates who, maybe if this wasn't their first anti-white supremacist demonstration, it was definitely one of their first. And there were about, there were maybe about 10 of them plus random alt-right news people scattered throughout the crowd, aggressively filming everyone with their phones.
This is like Big League Politics and other websites.
Yeah. And also just like random people who I assume are affiliated with ACT BACK in some way. But there were definitely some like ACT BACK looking people who were just like getting way up in protesters' faces. Basically the strategy we pursued there was trying to no platform them. So we were trying to put our bodies between these neo-Confederates and media, who of course wanted to cover them. And we did it with pretty small numbers. We hadn't organized until the day before for this event, because we didn't know what was happening. It didn't have a time either. So we were just like, I sort of thought we'd just sit out there all day and they wouldn't even come. We were really close to them. There weren't any barricades or anything separating us from them. And six people from our side, one from their side, ended up getting arrested for a variety of like ridiculous things. Like one UNC undergraduate, I imagine you probably saw the video, just got clocked in the face by this giant neo-Confederate dude. Mm-hmm. His name is Barry Brown. But the kid just, or this young man, I shouldn't say the kid, this undergraduate student just totally takes it. He doesn't like go down or anything. He just like, I don't know how he withstood that punch without moving.
Right.
Crazy. But anyway, he was charged. So obviously Barry Brown was charged with assault, but then this kid was charged too, because he like allegedly touched Barry Brown's flowers, before, before getting punched. And like, I just don't understand what the district attorney is thinking doing that. 'Cause we do live in a town like full of liberals. And the district attorney who prosecuted this, the alleged statue topplers last year in Durham, our neighboring town, was voted out of office. So like, I just hope he's thinking about that, and drops the charges.
Well, 'cause it seems like local Republicans or some Republicans have really come out in support of the statue.
Yeah, so the legislature in North Carolina is incredibly conservative because of aggressive gerrymandering that has been struck down repeatedly in federal courts, but not such that they ever seem to be redrawn for elections, because democracy is a lie. The legislature is extremely conservative and has come out hard in favor of the statue and in favor of really harshly prosecuting the statue topplers.
Mm-hmm.
But our town is extremely liberal, and tons of people, including elected officials, have come out in support of the statue topplers and in support of the statue being toppled. Like, even the terrible chancellor of UNC, Chancellor Folt, who has just been a like disgusting figure in this, just completely complicit with white supremacy, but pretending to be like a liberal ally,
mm-hmm.
Was like, this is really said about the toppling, basically, like, this is a remarkable, miraculous opportunity for us to think about where the statue might go. You know, and this is like 2 days after she's like releasing a statement like, these are a bunch of criminals and they will be charged.
Right.
So
we were going to move it anyway. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's definitely like, it's actually crazy being part of something like this that is receiving so much so much support from our like local media in our town, and then also national and international media. And it's really a lot of it is just the state legislature and of course Republicans and conservatives, you know, saying that this was bad. But there's really broad support even from people who typically wouldn't take a stand on something like this, in support of the students. So like the UNC undergraduate executive board released a really strong statement in support of the statue topplers, and like the business district of Chapel Hill released a statement about that the statue shouldn't go back up. So just people you wouldn't expect are being supportive of what happened, which is great.
And then so they're saying the statue won't go back up on the campus, but they might put it somewhere else.
Well, so this terrible chancellor is saying, released a statement that seemed to say that she wasn't going to put it back up in its previous location.
Uh-huh.
Although she then declined to say whether or not that was what she had said. So there's still some question. It's still possible for it to be put back up where it was. I think that with the number of arrests there have been in subsequent demonstrations, there were up to 25 anti-racist, anti-white supremacist arrests since August 20th, including August 20th. It's increasingly difficult to do that, even just for like quote unquote safety reasons. But she could still put it back there. She could still put it on campus. They've talked about putting it in one of the libraries or in a cemetery on campus, but there's also wide pushback against that. The libraries released a statement that they weren't going to take it. So, yeah.
Interesting. And then do you just want to talk about what happened this last Saturday? There was a call for like a picnic. People were encouraged to bring out canned food items, which are going to be given away to people in need. And also, this was also called in defense of the space, because supposedly there was going to be neo-Confederates that were going to show up again. Do you just want to talk about what happened then?
Yeah, so there was a group, you know, pro-Confederate group, I can't remember their name, but they're not local, who called for a prayer vigil or something. And we knew it was probably going to be pretty small because that group traditionally hadn't drawn big numbers. But we decided we wanted to do another positive event. We had done a dance party on the Thursday. So the statue went down on Monday. There was a demo on Saturday. Then there was another demo on Thursday. Again, the biggest group of white supremacists. So there was like a group of 50 maybe that day. And the dance party was great. We only had 3 arrests that night, which are good numbers for us at this point. Anyway, this Saturday we didn't expect 50 people, but we're like, okay, we'll do another positive event because the dance party went so well. And so we're like, okay, we're going to have a potluck and we're going to do canned food donations. And, you know, we show up with our cans and the cops like aggressively, I showed up with, you know, cans and like, walked to the table where the potluck was and put them in a box. And, you know, 5 cops ran over and then picked up the box and carried it to these 4 recycling bins that they had set up on each side of the quad. And the recycling bins were chained shut and they had like 5 to 10 cops guarding each bin. And they didn't like cite any policy. They didn't say anything about like why they were doing this. So there were confrontations throughout the night with police, just verbal confrontations about, why they were doing this. And there were cops from all over the state. So, there were like at all the bins and throughout the whole action. I mean, I saw cops from like Wilmington, Greensboro, Asheville, like Wilmington and Asheville are basically on the outer edges of each side of North Carolina. So they are drawing in cub resources from all over the state to repress this event that only had like 100 protesters at it, maybe, and like 10 neo-Confederates. And there were probably 50 cops, maybe more.
Well, I think a big question with something like this is, you know, obviously there's there seems to be widespread support for, you know, a very blatant act of, you know, people coming together and tearing down the statue. And I would assume also that most people are thinking, like, you know, wow, the police really stepped out of bounds and pepper sprayed all these people and, you know, how horrible that is and blah, blah, blah. But I'm just curious, you know, for us, like, what's the next step in that situation? Like, how do we take it further or kind of like build out of that situation?
I think that getting, at least for our situation here, I think that getting people who wouldn't normally show up to these events to show up to them is super important. So what we've seen is the fewer numbers we have, the more arrests we have. And it doesn't really matter how aggressive or not aggressive we're being. That like they'll use a relatively fewer number of anti-racist protesters being there to arrest a large number of them for no reason. And every time there's one of these demonstrations, you know, the town parent group sends out an email, the chancellor sends out an email, all the liberals are like, keep your kids at home, stay home, don't go to this place this day. Like, it's dangerous. And it is dangerous, but it's dangerous, frankly, not because of the neo-Confederates, but because of the police. I mean, the neo-Confederates, they're not dangerous, but the police have been way more dangerous to us and caused us way, way, way more harm than any of the neo-Confederates. And so, like, trying to counter the idea that, like, liberals have that they should stay home where the state can, like, keep them safe and not repress them is something that I'm really interested in working on. Because also by people staying home, it makes protesters the other or this, like, extreme group that should have known better, you know, that should have stayed home and just let the neo-Confederates come unopposed. And I think that they don't think through what that would mean to, especially to the most vulnerable people on our campus. And so, yeah, just trying to get those messages out to them. And then also thinking strategically about when a situation goes into a pattern of just like repeated, like we basically have a dance down with the cops now where they take the neo-Confederates away. Like we follow them, they pepper spray us or arrest us. Like, in the same place, like we even have the location of where the arrests happen down. So it's like getting out of that dance that we're in with them, and like changing the situation. Cause one reason that Monday when the statue was toppled worked so well is that, what we did was a totally new erecting that alternative monument was something that was new, was something that, the police like weren't prepared for, and was also something that was really beautiful and meaningful to us. So trying to figure out ways to fight white supremacy that aren't just these battles of attrition, basically, that feel good to participants. Like, I'm definitely looking to create events like that for the future.
You know, it seems like the pattern that the police are using in North Carolina is similar to everything we've seen across the country, whether it's in Portland or Berkeley, essentially, you know, attack the anti-fascists or, you know, the anti-racist side to allow the fascists to leave or, you know, to engage in whatever activity they're doing. But at the same time, it just seems like there's such a cost to that because they're basically, you know, before it used to be like, oh, get the people in black. And now they're like everybody that's on this other side, right, which is always the bigger side.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious if you're seeing that play out. Like are a lot of more people just like, you know, fuck the police now?
Yeah. I mean, every time they do something like this, the people become more skeptical about the police. But I think also so many people have this idea that what the police do is just, and whatever they do must have been justified by what was happening. And so, like, I showed a family member a video from Saturday that, to me, is appalling. I mean, I was there, and I was appalled by what happened, and shocked to see that carried out at UNC specifically. Just because it was so much more violent than the policing had been previously. And so I showed it to a family member, and the family member was like, "Oh well, but you know, the cops must have felt afraid." And you know, the idea that the cops, that 50 armed, the teeth cops in Rye, you know, would be like afraid of some unarmed students, like who aren't even doing anything to them, is like so absurd. So yeah, I think that people are getting radicalized, but you know, of course, not at a rate quick enough for my taste.
This has been the It's Going Down podcast. Check itsgoingdown.org for daily updates, columns, action reports, and news. Go to itsgoingdown.org/shop to support us, and follow us on all social media platforms. IGD, your daily resource for insurgent proletarian life.